Now let us read together, please, from Genesis chapter 11. Genesis chapter 11. And I'm very sorry if I made you feel like that, Laura. Because I would rather you have gone on for another quarter of an hour tonight. Now we're going to read from chapter 11, verse 1. And the whole earth was of one language and of one speech. And it came to pass, as they journeyed from the east, that they found a plain in the land of Shinar, and they dwelt there. And they said one to another, Go to, let us make brick, and burn them thoroughly. And they had brick for stone, and slime had they for mortar. And they said, Go to, let us build us a city, and a tower, whose top may reach unto heaven, and let us make us a name, lest we be scattered abroad upon the face of the whole earth. And the Lord came down to see the city and the tower, which the children of men builded. And the Lord said, Behold, the people is one, and they have all one language. And this they begin to do, and now nothing will be restrained from them, which they have imagined to do. Go to, let us go down and there confound their language, that they may not understand one another's speech. So the Lord scattered them abroad from thence upon the face of all the earth, and they left off to build the city. Therefore is the name of it called Babel, because the Lord did there confound the language of all the earth, and from thence did the Lord scatter them abroad upon the face of all the earth. These are the generations of Shem. Shem was 100 years old, and begat Arpachshad 2 years after the flood. And Shem lived after he begat Arpachshad 500 years, and begat sons and daughters. And Arpachshad lived 35 years, and begat Salah. And Arpachshad lived after he begat Salah 403 years, and begat sons and daughters. So begins this genealogy. Look down now, you'll see that Salah is born in verse 13. And then we read in verse 15, He lived after he begat Eber 403 years, and begat sons and daughters. Now the death of Eber, or at least the length of the life of Eber, is given to us in verse 17. Because there we read that he lived 430 years, and begat sons and daughters. And that makes his age to be 464. Notice that, we'll come back to it later, and I'm going to continue the reading, but look at verse 11. Shem died at the age of 600 when you count the two verses. You've got to count two verses together each time to get the age. Arpachshad lived for 438 years. Salah lived for 433 years. And Eber lived for 464 years. That's where we've arrived in our reading. Now look at Eber begat Peleg. And of Peleg we read in verse 19 that he lived for 239 years in total. You add the 209 to the previous figure that we have in verse 18. And then of course he had Reu. And you'll get the total age of Reu by the same formula, and it's 239 years. And then if you look at verse 23, Serug, named in verse 21 as the son of Reu, his total age is 230 years. And then it says in verse 25, Nahor, who is the son of Serug, he lived after he begat Terah 119 years and begat sons and daughters. Now notice that Nahor is in fact the grandfather of Abraham. Can you see that? It says Nahor lived after he begat Terah 119 years. So Terah is Nahor's son, and then you'll see a father, a son rather, and then you'll notice in verse 26, and Terah lived 70 years and begat Abram, Nahor, and Haran. Now we trust that God will bless the reading of his good word to us tonight. Well, all these passages in Genesis, whilst they perhaps are not very familiar, and for that reason have perhaps not been just as easy for us always to follow, there is no doubt that there has been good wisdom in the minds of the brethren who convened these meetings, who suggested that we went through these chapters. Because I think we have been able to see that we have the opportunity to glean many very important principles that run over all the dispensations of time and are found set in the seed plot of the Bible, which is the book of Genesis. We've seen that already. So that we're really looking not only at the book of beginnings, but the very first book of the beginnings, if you like, the book of the book of beginnings. We're looking at the very seed plot of the book of Genesis itself in these first 12 chapters. I hardly need to remind you, but perhaps I should, because we're getting near to the end of the period. Our brother was going to talk about days, and he had to change it to the singular, because in the will of God we've only got tomorrow to continue these meetings. And we've noticed, you remember, that if, even if you weren't here, this is how it reads on the leaflet. On the Lord's Day, we looked at chapters 1 and 2 of the book. And we looked at the creation and the creator. And the creation and the creature. And then throughout this week, we've looked on Monday at sin in the garden. And then we saw that then they were put out of the garden, but then the sin that was in the parents was in the nature of those parents, so was communicated to the very first children that were ever born on earth. So we looked, therefore, at sin in the family in chapter 4, verses 1 to 12. And then on Tuesday, we began to look now at the first real evidence of sin in that family. And we looked at the consequences of it. And we saw Cain and his line. And we began to trace two lines. And then we looked at Seth and his line. Now that was on Tuesday night. And we saw that the promise of Genesis 3:15 is still clearly in the mind and purpose of God. And it hasn't finished yet, brethren and sisters. Don't let's forget that now. The seed of the woman will bruise the serpent's head. And God has made that promise, and God will fulfill it. It was, of course, fulfilled at the cross, but its ultimate is yet to be seen in the future. And so the two lines are still a very important matter. And then we noticed, of course, when we came, last night, to look at Noah and the flood, and we saw the way in which God had to deal in judgment with the world, and the whole, don't forget now, we must understand this, that the whole line of Cain was completely eradicated. Are you listening to that? Completely eradicated at the time of the flood. There was only Shem and Ham and Japheth who came out of that ark along with Noah and his wife. And so we are now tracing a fresh genealogical line, if you like. And God's purpose is going to be achieved. And remember, we have often heard it pointed out that whilst we have those few chapters that deal with the creation of this great universe, look at the remarkable chapters that are going to be devoted to the man that we're going to start studying tomorrow night. Because the purpose of God and the seed and the covenant and the land and the throne are all linked up with that man. You see, God's purpose, it seems to be all out of weight and balance with the way we would work things out. But this is the thread of the book. So we've been studying very important principles. Now the next thing I want us to notice tonight as we're looking at these two subjects that we have been looking at, that we have been mentioning, and our brother has done it a number of times, and I've done it sometimes, we've mentioned dispensations. And I thought it might be profitable tonight, because we have so many with us, and we don't maybe always explain what we mean when we talk of this matter of dispensations. I thought I'd like for a few minutes, if I may, at the beginning to talk to you about that. And try to clarify this matter of what we mean by a dispensation. Well, it's usually said that we have set out for us in the Bible 7 dispensations in all. And when we speak of a dispensation, it's not merely a period of time, although it involves time, but it's the way in which God deals with mankind over particular periods of time. Let me put it to you like this, that it's the age or way of God with man. And all of these periods have certain features in common. So if you're going to define a dispensation, we could think of it, I want to suggest to you like this. They all have certain features in common. In each one, God begins, now listen carefully, in each one, God begins by making a new approach. That's the first thing to remember. And then in each one, God vouchsafes, he makes to man a new revelation. That's another feature of a dispensation. And then thirdly, in each dispensation, God commits a fresh stewardship to chosen leaders that he will raise up. And then during each dispensation, man has proved himself to be an utter failure and becomes apostate. And consequently, each one terminates in judgment. Now, shall I go through that again very quickly? What I'm really saying to you is this. A dispensation is a stewardship of God in his purpose with man, which is characterized by God making a new approach to man. He vouchsafes to him a new revelation. He commits to him a fresh stewardship, or to steward to leaders that he will raise up, chosen leaders. And during each, man proves to be an utter failure. He can't cope and he can't deal with and he can't handle the stewardship that God gives to him. And thus he becomes apostate. And consequently, each dispensation terminates in judgment. Now let me go through the 7 very briefly. The first dispensation, our brother mentioned it in his ministry, the dispensation of innocence. It reached from creation to the fall. I hardly need to tell you that God made a new approach. He was, of course, we know from the beginning that creation was the beginning of this world's history. And that's recorded for us in the chapters that we have been studying. And he revealed himself in a particular way as the Creator God. Elohim, the Creator God. We saw that unique title of his in Genesis chapter 1. And then, of course, he did commit that stewardship into the hands of Adam. And he gave him rule and dominion in the garden. And then we can see how that during that dispensation, Adam proved to be a failure. And I don't need to say any more than that to you today. And then, of course, we know that the judgment was given because he was put out from the garden. What was the second dispensation that we speak of? Well, the second dispensation is the dispensation of conscience. And our brother, I think, mentioned that one too, one day. Now, that reaches really from the fall, the end of the fall, as they're put out, to the flood. So you see, we're covering appropriate periods now. We're just tying things together a wee bit for a moment. Well, God made a new approach. He had to make a different approach to Adam right away when he sinned. You remember he said in the garden, where art thou? And God asks questions that he should never have needed to ask if Adam had not sinned. He's making a new approach to him. And then, of course, we know that God made a new revelation of himself, for he comes to him as the God of judgment now. Adam had not known that yet. Adam had only known the love and the provision and the grace of a Creator God. But he now has to learn the judgment of the nature of God. And then, of course, he gives to him a new stewardship. But Adam learns that instead of working in the way our brother Jack helpfully pointed out before the fall, which had to do with pleasure and joy, he now has to earn his bread by the sweat of his brow. And that's an unfinished work, for it's still going on. To a greater or lesser degree, we may do it by the sweat of our face, but nevertheless we work for our living. And that's been explored on a number of occasions in these meetings during this week. And then, of course, we know that man became a failure in that. And there was corruption. We studied it prior to the flood, just the other night. And God came in judgment. Can you see the same features associated with that second dispensation? Now, I'll have to press the accelerator down, but let me just quickly go through the others. Human government is the next dispensation. That reaches from Noah to Babel. So here we are, right in where we are now in the part of the book of Genesis. Noah to Babel. And God made a fresh approach. God smelled, do you remember? We noted that at the end of the ministry last night. The smell of the offering that Noah made on the grounds of a new earth as he's come out of the flood. And then, of course, we notice how that God made a new revelation of himself in that way, because, and he gave to them a new stewardship, for he brought to them a new covenant, and he said, you'll see the bow in the cloud, and so on. And God said to him, be fruitful and multiply. And so he raised up chosen leaders. There was Noah, and there were his sons. And then you can see now that we are coming tonight, and we've already been seeing it in the hands of Nimrod. And in the story that we're going to look at in a moment or two, the corruption, the departure, the apostasy again, the greatest picture of the greatest apostate, that's what we've been learning, Nimrod, the picture of the great Antichrist of a day which is yet to come, the Babylon of the end time prefigured and all seen in microcosm in the Babel, the original Babel. That's what we've been learning very helpfully from our brothers, giving us a lot of very important information tonight. You can see that the judgment of God is going to come, and God confounds the language. So the same principles, the same factors are marking that dispensation. The next dispensation, really, we start to look at, but we won't finish it. We'll only start to look at it tomorrow night. That's the dispensation, of course, of promise. When God made a covenant to Abraham, and God dealt with Abraham in a new way, and committed a new stewardship to thee and to thy seed. And you can see how that he said, I will make of thee a great nation. And he gave to him a stewardship to get thee out, and he had to go out onto the path of pilgrimage, and we've been singing about it tonight. Our brother said to me, it's not easy to get hymns to cover the subjects that we're dealing with. Well, it was there in a sense, wasn't it, in that hymn that we had? And then, of course, you notice how that when we come on into the book of Exodus, they murmured against God, and judgment had to come in again in the wilderness. And there was a lot of apostasy in the wilderness, and only two of the grown men went into the land again. So you can see now that God came in judgment. The same principles, you see. And then, of course, we come to the next of those dispensations, which is the dispensation of law. And that was from Moses to Christ. And that was the giving of the law. God made a fresh revelation of himself. And God also gave to them a fresh stewardship. He gave them the law, the Decalogue, to be kept. So he made them stewards of it. And Israel and Manus failed miserably in it. And I don't need to tell you that Israel was tested when Christ came, and in the judgment hall they said, away with him. And God has come in judgment on their scattered today. The nation is scattered. I'm just trying to show you the same principles running all these dispensations. Forgive me for going on for so long about it. But mind you, we don't often have it sort of set out for us to consider. So maybe it's just helpful to do that. And then well, if the present day can be called a dispensation. It is an administration of God's ways. There is a period of God's ways, although it wasn't forecast in the Old Testament. And we speak about the day of grace, don't we? The period of grace. And I don't need to remind you that God manifested himself in a new way. Great is the mystery of godliness. God was manifest in flesh. A wonderful day when God himself in the person of his Son came down. God was manifest. So he certainly manifested himself in a new way. And he's given a new stewardship. Chosen leaders. Those apostles and prophets by the Spirit were given a ministry that's been committed to us. And we are the servants of Christ doing the will of God from the heart. I don't need to tell you too much about the present day, do I? Preaching of the gospel. Let me just remind you at the end that the last of those periods is called in Ephesians chapter 1, and I was glad that we all seem to be happy and of one mind on this in our interpretation on Saturday night, nearly a week now. We read verse 10 of that chapter. and in the dispensation of the fullness of the times. For God is going to complete all the times in one glorious age. Not the ages, but the age to come. And it'll all be headed up in Christ. And mind you, there'll be no failure. There'll be failure at the end of it, of course, in man. But the same features, if we study them carefully, we'll see them. But we're glad to know that Jesus shall reign where'er the Son. For God is a righteous King to sit upon the throne in millennial glory. So we now then are looking tonight at this aspect of dispensations, these aspects. And of course we come to the end of one in our ministry tonight. So let me talk to you about chapter 11. You see, our brother had ways of filling in his ministry, and I've had ways of doing it too. But I think I think all this ministry that we've been thinking now is valuable to our minds and to our hearts. There's a lot to help us on the way home to heaven if we can think of these things. So I want you to notice with me now, as we come to chapter 11, that we have an event of almost equal significance as the flood in this chapter. And I'm glad that our brother showed. Did you pick it up? I think you did. Did you notice how he showed that there is a sense in which when we read these verses in chapter 11, they fit into the context of chapter 10. Do you remember he showed the tongues were in chapter 10 already, and yet the confusion of the tongues. So there was more than one tongue. That's the point he was making. But the confusion of the tongues is not described till you come to chapter 11. And another third to that, which I think he mentioned, but if he didn't, I'll mention it now. And it's this, that you can see that when you're in chapter 10, I think he did say it, that there's Shem in chapter 10, and we return back to Shem when we come to verse 10 of chapter 11. These are the generations of Shem. So what he was showing was that chapter 11 in measure is a parenthesis and belongs to a just slightly earlier period in the chronology of the book. I hope we got that clear. So that's why then, what I can do now is transpose the information, are you listening carefully now, that is in chapter 11 and put it on the top of what our brother has said and put Nimrod right in the middle of the picture. I think that's what you were implying to. You see the point? That we can lift the picture of chapter 11 that does not name Nimrod for us and put it right over Nimrod and put him right there in the middle of that picture. It's like an overlay. You know, if you have one of these overhead projectors, you see, you bring one over the other and you can see it sitting there then. You can bring that chapter one to the other like that. Now bear that in your mind and come to chapter 11. And I want to talk to you about verses 1 to 4 for a few moments. And over that I've written this tonight, the independence of man. The independence of man. And then I want us to think about verses 5 to 7. And there we're going to think about the intelligence of Jehovah. Do you notice how it says in verse number 5, and the Lord came down to see. To see. And then you notice it says in verse 6, and the Lord said. And then you see in verse 7, and God said, go to, let us go down. The intelligence of Jehovah. But Jehovah is intelligent of everything that man is doing. You see Psalm number 2, oh, those kings are saying this and they're saying that, and let us do this. And he that sitteth in the heavens shall laugh. He has them in derision, for he knows it all. Nothing that he's unaware of now. You must remember that. And by the way, he knows everything in your heart and mine and in the assembly. You see, we can glean the principles of all that and apply them. So we have the intelligence of Jehovah. And then we want to look at verses 8 and 9, where we have the intervention of Jehovah. The intervention of Jehovah. For that's when the Lord does confound the language and scatter them abroad. So that's what I want us to think about for a few moments. Think with me first of all about the first four verses. The independence of man. And the whole earth was of one language and of one speech. And it came to pass as they journeyed from the east. But if you read the margin and look at some of the facts that lie in the background of these parts, you can see they're really journeying towards the east, eastward. And that they're coming down from the mountains of Ararat, remember. And notice that it says, from all that higher area, and they found a plain in the land of Shinar, and they dwelt there. So we have now this movement of men. The first thing I want you to notice with me in those verses is there's no mention of God. Do you notice that? There's no mention of God. God is not in their thoughts. Do bear that in mind. God is not in their thoughts. You see how it says in verse 3, they said, let us make. And they said, let us build. And there's no thought of God in their hearts at all. That's the first thing to notice. Now the next thing I want you to notice with me is this. That they're moving. It says they journeyed and they found and then they dwelt. For the wicked are just like a troubled sea. But they find a place now and they say this is the place to be. And so we find that there is the ingenuity of their mind now, because it says, they said, let us make brick and burn them thoroughly. And they had brick for stone and slime for mortar. And now they've gained the materials. And what they want to do is three things. Look at it in verse 4. They say, we'll build a city and we'll build a tower and then we'll make us a name. Now I want to remind you tonight that we read in other scripture, in both Old and New Testament, that God has appointed the bounds of man's habitation. And God is a God. You know, the late Mr. Harry Lacy, that great man of God, some of you remember him, coming to minister, I think, at these very air Bible readings at one time. Well, you know, he wrote a book called God and the Nations, for God is aware of the movements of the nations. And God has a place for the nations. And when Paul preached in Acts chapter 17 on that hill at Athens there, Mars Hill, he said, God has made of one blood all men to dwell upon the face of the earth, but he hath appointed the bounds of their habitations. So that God has set that out. But you see, what man, are you listening now, what man wanted to do? He wanted to get into one place. And he wanted to concentrate all his effort in one way. You know, brethren, that's the principle our brother was saying. I would probably bring you to refer you to the book of Revelation. If we don't get to it, I want to bring you to it now, right now, the principle of it. That there is a day coming when the Nimrod of the New Testament, the rebel, remember he's the rebellious man, that's the meaning of his name, Nimrod, the rebel. 2 Thessalonians chapter 2 speaks of him as the lawless one. The man of sin, the wicked one, that wicked one is literally the lawless one. Mr. Darby translates it like that. And there's going to be a blocking of everything. Mind you, we can see almost in our day the embryo of it, can't we? Did we ever think, some of us even, that we would see so much accumulation in different ways within society that we can see today? Think of the great commercial blocks that have been formed. The great super chains and hypermarkets and commerce all collecting together. And the great religious unity that the world has formed. That ecumenical movement that people speak about. It's religious Babylon. And by the way, don't forget, God's voice in Revelation 17 is, come out of her, my people. But long before you ever read Revelation 17, are you listening now? You read 2 Corinthians chapter 6 that says, come out from among them and be ye separate, saith the Lord. And we're going to understand the distinctiveness that God would put upon his chosen, his own people, the people of God, not to be linked up with religious blocks. And to remember the dangers of all those other, the political union. Now, I'm not here to talk to you about the 10, you know, the common market or anything like that, but you know that there is going to be a block of 10. And it doesn't matter whether it gets bigger or smaller, when the day comes, it'll be there. And I personally believe there is going to be a revived Roman Empire. I personally believe that the teaching of Daniel chapter 2 and of Daniel chapter 7 is that there is going to be a fourth kingdom. Or at least the fourth kingdom will be continued. Don't forget this day in which we live. Started on the day of Pentecost. And will conclude at the rapture. And I personally believe that what was in the world, from the point of view of the fourth kingdom, in Daniel chapter 7, that was present when our Lord was here, That fourth kingdom, I personally believe it will be present in that future day again. And Babylon, I believe to be mystical Babylon, not literal Babylon. But I leave that with you. I know that's not the view of everybody. But what I do want to point out to you is this, that the very principles that are seen in Genesis chapter 11 are going to be in evidence in a future day. Now, will you notice with me then? They say, let us build us a city. A city. It's amazing how sin is always associated with the city. You know, when the millennium comes, it will be a rural life. Rural life. Early this year, I was in a country where I never was in a place that was as rural in all my life. But brethren and sisters, it's going to be orderly rural life in that day. Every man will sit down by his vine, his fig tree. Wonderful conditions when the curse will be removed from earth. But what a wonderful thing for us to know that that's God's order, but you see, man was making a city. Of course, it's all going to be headed up in a city. The same chapter of Revelation, chapter 17, will speak about a city. And you see, they wanted to make a city. But they wanted to make a tower. Do you see that in verse 4? A tower whose top may reach not to heaven, but unto heaven. There's a difference. Not into heaven, but unto heaven. I don't think that these men were foolish enough to think that they would be able to build it. You know, when I was a boy, at first in a Sunday school, I thought somehow that this was a tower that would go higher and higher and higher till they got into heaven. But you've only got to look at those heavens to see that that would be impossible. And those men had just lived not long after the flood. When they knew a mighty silt of water would soon remove any structure like that. No, it's more than that. You see, it was unto heaven. The late Mr. Foster, many of you remember Mr. W.P. Foster, he held very strongly that at the top of that tower, which was unto heaven, they had placed all those 12 signs of the zodiac. The astrology of the day, of our day. Some of you now read the paper and look for your future in it. You shouldn't do it if you're a child of God. It's got to do with the occult. It's got to do with a godless world that's headed up by Satan. He's the god of this age. And that's what Mr. Foster believed, and there may be a fair amount of truth in what he was saying. Reaching up to heaven, the heavenly idea, you see. But it's the devil's heaven that's in view. It's not a spiritual idea at all. It's a very, very anti-spiritual idea. And they said, let us build a tower. It was a symbol of religion. There's plenty of symbols of religion about in our day. May God preserve us and keep us clean from all these things. Something precious. I thank God as a boy. I thank God that I learned the truth of just gathering simply to the Lord's name. With nothing extra, just in that little city of Louisville. I'm glad I learned that truth. And I didn't always do it. I used to go and preach it other places. But I learned the truth of gathering to the Lord's name. And I'm glad I learned it. And got a little bit of conviction about it. And I want to say we should cherish and value the fact that God has given us the opportunity just to meet with saints of like mind and put a little table in the middle with the simple emblems, the only things that are tangible that God has given us in the New Testament, and break bread until he comes and meet like that. The simplicity of our life as believers is a very precious thing, and it's free and available to all who love the Lord and will only do that and gather in the same way. You know, there's no charge for it, and there's maybe a reproach associated with it, but there's a great blessing with it. I want to say tonight, brethren and sisters, that they wanted to build a tower, you see. And then you'll notice that it says that, let us make us a name. And I tell you, that man of the future, he'll have a name all right. I'm tempted to talk to you about him just for a moment, and I don't think I'm going to get to Revelation 17 at all, but I can think you can see the way we both transposed a bit of it onto it anyway. You'd have to read that for yourself, and we'd have to have the week on Revelation to do that anyway sometime. But let me remind you that the Lord Jesus said this. Are you listening now? The Lord Jesus said this. He said, I am come in my Father's name, and ye receive me not. And then he went on to say, another will come in his own name, and him ye will receive. That's the man to watch out for. Well, we won't need to watch out for him. We'll be taken before he's manifest. He can't be manifested until we've been gathered together unto him. Read 2 Thessalonians chapter 2. But you see, what I am saying to you is this, brethren and sisters. The nation that was so privileged to have brought into its midst the Son of God, he came unto his own. I know it's his own people and his own nation and his own temple, but it's also his own people. Came unto his own, and his own received him not. And they didn't recognize the Son of God was here. And they took him eventually to the judgment hall, and they said, away with him. We will not have this man to reign over us. And they rejected the Christ of God. And the New Testament Nimrod will stand one day. And 2 Thessalonians 2 says he'll perform miracles. And he'll be able to perform signs and lying wonders. And he'll dupe and deceive them. And they rejected the real man. And they'll accept the rebel. They don't know he's a rebel then. And he'll keep them right for a bit. And he'll make a covenant with them. And he'll keep it for 3.5 years. But in the middle of that week, in other words, at the end of the 3.5 years, but it's a 7-year week, he'll break the covenant. And he'll defile the very sanctuary of God. And then they'll realize they've been duped. And they'll find out that he's a rebel all right then. And they'll suffer at his hands then. The greatest wave of anti-Semitism that the world has ever seen or will ever see will take place then. Not Hitler's Holocaust. Not the children weeping in Jeremiah. Not the work of Herod in the Gospels. Not the work of Pharaoh in Exodus. But read about it in Revelation 12. When the devil is cast down from earth. And the man of sin is here. I tell you, it'll be hard for the Jew then. And they'll find that his blood will be upon them. For those that commences, that's the seventh, that's the great tribulation our brother's been speaking about. The second 3.5 years. The great tribulation. 6 times it's spoken about in the Bible. 4 times in relation to Israel, 2 in relation to the world. Because primarily it's Jacob's trouble, but it will come upon all the world to try it, you see. Sad, sad, sorry day is going to come, prefigured in the confusion of men in their independence. And they say, they lift their puny hands to God, the independence of man. Can you see what I have in mind, the theme that's in these 4 verses? We can't stay with them any longer now. And then look at the intelligence of Jehovah just for a moment. The intelligence of Jehovah. For it says in verse number 5, the Lord came down to see. Do you know, brethren and sisters, isn't it interesting? We know that God is omniscient. Now don't misunderstand me. We know that God is on the throne. He just sees everything right away. But these terms are used to bring before us the force of the fact that God is interested and involved in the affairs of men. He hasn't forgotten his universe. And God doesn't need to come and... You and I would need to go. Somebody says there's something wrong down there. We have to go and see it. And so God uses human language to show. And it says the Lord came down. See that? The Lord came down to see. Isn't that interesting? And it says in verse number 5, to see the city and the tower. He looked at that city. And he looked at that tower. And then it says in verse number 6, and the Lord said, behold, the people is one, and they have one language. This they begin to do. And you see, before the time, there's a sense in which God is are you listening now? God is going to let them do all that in the book of Revelation and 2 Thessalonians and Matthew and these passages that teach it and the Old Testament prophets, our brothers. God is going to allow it. But he wouldn't allow it then. Are you listening to that now? It wasn't the time. I want you to get that lesson now. That's very important in prophecy. I believe this with all my heart. Prophecy, we see the man of sin and we see all these men and say they're going to do all this. But God isn't going to allow it. He's going to allow it. And they wouldn't be able to do it if God didn't allow them. I love to read a verse in 2 Thessalonians that says this. And then, listen to what it says. And then shall that wicked one be revealed, whom the Lord shall consume with the spirit of his mouth. And you think, the way you read it, if you read it like I would read it, as anybody should read it, you'd almost think he comes and he's consumed. But it's going to be a long time in the world before he's consumed. He's going to be at least 3.5 years in the world. Well, longer, isn't he? Probably nearer 7. Before he gets consumed. But you see what God is saying? Before he ever comes, he's going to be consumed. But God is going to allow him those years. See? So God wouldn't let the first Nimrod do his work then. And God wouldn't let them stay there then, because God is waiting. His purposes are going to... I've done the very thing you said. His purpose is going to unfold. You see? He's going to work his own purpose out. It's all going to be headed up in Christ one day. Isn't that a wonderful thing? And so you can see the Lord said, and the Lord came, and the Lord said, behold, the people is one, they have one language, this they begin to do. Nothing will be restrained. Let us go down and confound their language. Come now to verses 8 and 9, for the time is nearly gone. The intervention of God. So the Lord scattered them. The Lord scattered them. That's a divine method that God has used on many occasions. He sent Adam out of the garden. He sent him, he scattered him out of the garden, you see. Isn't it interesting, brethren and sisters, that we can see how that with Cain, he sent him out as a vagabond into the earth. He sent him out, he scattered him out from the presence of the Lord. Here we have it in Babel. You know what he did it with Israel? And Israel were, because they disobeyed God in the land, they were scattered down into Babylon, out into Babylon. He's done it dispensationally in this day. The nation of Israel is scattered to every part of the world. There are Polish Jews and German Jews and British Jews and Scottish Jews. There's Jews everywhere. They're still Jews. They've been scattered. Interesting, isn't it? And God said, let us scatter them. It's one of his divine methods, one of his great divine methods of administration and judgment. And God said, we'll scatter them. And he did scatter them. And they left off to build the city. It almost sounds as though that they didn't get the city completed. They might have got the tower up a good way, but they didn't seem to get the... They have to leave off to build the city. Therefore, the name is called Confusion. Babel, Confusion, because the Lord did there confuse the language of all the earth. And I want to remind you tonight, and I didn't think I'd be overgoing my time, but it looks as though I will, but I'll not be long. And I want to just say this to you, that isn't it interesting that what God did, I don't need to tell you, he did it very effectively. We've got some missionaries in the meeting here tonight. They had to learn the language to go to another place. And it's a very confusing thing when you've got to go to a place and speak by interpretation all the time and wonder whether they're saying what you wanted to say. God very effectively confused the language. And he stopped man coming together. And they're trying to get back to it, but they'll never do it properly until the man of sin and God will allow that. And then he'll destroy it. And he'll break it again. You know he can reverse it when he wants. He did it on the day of Pentecost. You remember tongues? Big subject, we can't go into it tonight. But God has control of these things, you see. It's interesting, isn't it? And then, brethren and sisters, I just want you to see in closing, because the time has gone, the second part of the chapter. Now, I did intentionally what I did in reading. Did you notice it tonight? I asked you to notice the decreasing ages in the genealogy. God seemed to use the period of the flood to bring down age and bring it down towards the years. Read Psalm 90 at your leisure. It talks about the flood and it speaks about the years of man's life being 70 years. The late Mr. William Rogers of Omer suggested there was a strong link between the flood reference and the diminution in age. You see the idea? There's maybe a lot to what he said if you think about it carefully now. And what I want you to see is this. This is the important thing, that we've got Shem brought before us. Ham and Japheth. You see, the Scottish tongue says Japheth, the English tongue says Japheth, but we're all one and we're saying that we're talking about the same things. But I want you to see this, that the line of the seed is not in Japheth, and the line of the seed is not in Ham. The line of the seed is in Shem. And so we find, and this is what we come on to in the ministry tomorrow. Shem is going to bring forth, as we see eventually, this man called Terah. And from Terah will come Abraham. And from Abraham will come Isaac. And from Isaac will come Jacob. And from Jacob will become come the 12 tribes that become the nation of Israel. And out from Israel will come he of whom Christ came. That nation of whom Christ came, who is God over all. Of whom Christ came, speaks of his humanity, but he's God over all. Blessed forevermore. And his purpose will be achieved in the man that came through that line. And we'll see it in Abraham a little in the will of God, just commencing tomorrow. May the Lord bless you.